Chapter 3. The fields of death blooms spilled across the landscape far beyond the giant oak that had been their gate out of the cascading path. The noxious flowers had spread like a contagion, consuming everything in their path. The stormcasts had seen clumps of trees covered in skull-like petals, entire woods that were veiled in the parasitic growths. They'd escorted the Sylvaneth column over hills heavy with the deathly flowers, and across streams choked by the pestilent weeds. Sometimes they found the sorry remnants of human settlements mouldering beneath a patina of death blooms. Here would be a tribal totem standing forlorn above a vanished encampment, and over there might be the rubble of a tower carpeted by the vile plants. Wherever they went, the slaves of the plague god were there. Sometimes entire war herds of braying gores would come tramping across the fields to challenge their passage. With the advance warning of Tegras and the other scouts, these mass attacks were steadily beaten back. More arduous were the raids and ambushes staged by smaller war bands. Barbaric horsemen would gallop out from the shelter of diseased woods to mount hit-and-run assaults. A host of armored chaos warriors sprang upon them from concealed pits, dealing several casualties before they were annihilated. In the wreckage of a village, the vanguard was surprised by a lurking Magoth, the monstrosity sending three liberators back to Sigmaron before a salvo from the Boltstorm crossbows brought the thing to ruin. The gauntlet of skirmishes posed no immediate peril to the column, but Grimm was deeply concerned just the same. Each attack taxed their strength a little more, wore down their endurance that tiny bit further. On their own, the raids were nothing. Put together, they became an insidious drain on the hallowed knights and their allies. They were forced to press on without rest or respite. Never could they let their guard down or relent in their vigilance. The moment when Tegras came back to Grimm to report that the land ahead of them sloped down towards a vast sea was the first cheering news he had heard in a long time. Surely this was the Sea of Serpents the Everqueen had told him of. His cheer faded when Tegras couldn't report any isthmus or other feature that offered some way of crossing the waters. No fleet waiting on the beach to carry the Everqueen and her protectors across. There was only the rocky shingle of the shore and the rolling waves. Grimm recalled Alariel's earlier words to him about peril and faith. The Radiant Queen was neither mad nor a fool. She hadn't rescued her people from the doom of Athelweard simply to trap them with their backs to the sea. She had some plan, even if she chose to keep it from her allies. Grimm felt a shiver pass through him when he reasoned that her plan likely involved another arcane crack in reality, some trail perhaps even more unsettling than the cascading path. He kept this concern to himself, however. It served no purpose to have his warriors worrying about something over which they had neither control nor influence. The sharp, briny smell of salt water reached Grimm an hour or so before the column crested a hill and finally gazed upon the Sea of Serpents. It was, as Tegras had reported, a great expanse of rolling waves that stretched out to the distant horizon, its far shore somewhere beyond. The vile death blooms spread only as far as the rocky shingle, their vitality finally overcome by the combination of barren rock and salt spray. The Sylvaneth marched down to the shingle with what struck Grimm as almost an exhibition of urgency. The stormcasts in the vanguard parted to let the tree creatures pass through them. With the sea in front of them, it was certain that if an attack came, the plague warriors wouldn't be charging from that quarter. The primes of the displaced retinues redeployed their liberators with the paladins in the rearguard. At Grimm's command, the judicators fell back and took up formation on the hill overlooking the shore. From such a vantage, they'd be able to both support the column and rain volleys upon any foe moving along the shingle. Lord Relictor Morbus waited while Grimm dispatched Tegras and his scouts back into the air. Now that they had the sea blocking their way, it was more vital than ever to know where the enemy was and how great his numbers. Once the prosecutors were airborne, Morbus addressed the Lord Castellant.
"Unless we build ships from our allies, we seem to be at an impasse,"
Morbus said. We can't go forwards, and with the plague hosts all around us, we can't go back. Grim looked towards the Sylvaneth column, watching the glowing form of the Everqueen as her carriage crawled ahead with its ring of Tree Lord guardians.
I think your true worry is that she will set us upon a road even stranger than the Cascading Path.
Morbus nodded.
Such a worry was in my mind, he confessed.
He gestured at the shore, at the rolling waves.
And this place has its own power. But I don't sense the same potential as when we were in Athelweard. If there is a gate, such as we passed through before, it is well hidden indeed.
Well, such may have been her purpose in bringing us here, Grim said. Any magic that hides from friend is able to hide from foe as well.
He patted Talon's head.
Sometimes faith is needed, he said,
echoing the advice Alariel had given him. A querulous bark from the Griffhound had him looking again towards the Sylvaneth. The tree creatures were on the shore now. He watched as the ring of tree lords parted. The radiant glow of the Everqueen shone more brightly as she emerged from behind her protectors. To Grim's eyes it appeared that the death blooms wilted wherever that light reached them, that even the ghoulish stain in the air was diminished. The Sylvaneth hung back as their queen's carriage crawled out onto the shingle. Only the Lady of Vines remained to attend the Everqueen, the handmaiden gliding alongside the palanquin. It made Grim anxious to see Alariel exposing herself in such a manner. With all deference to her power and authority, while he was responsible for protecting her, he felt obliged to demand greater caution. He started to march towards the shingle, when Morbus caught him by the arm.
"She's weaving some kind of spell," Morbus told him. "Something of enormous potential."
Grim felt that shiver pass through him again.
"You said this place wouldn't lend itself to any great conjuration."
He looked towards the beach. While he watched, Alariel descended from her carriage. The moment her feet touched the earth, the palanquin began to shrivel and wither, crumbling into a dried mess of wilted foliage. She stood poised where the waters crashed upon the shingle, the transition from one element to another. Her arms were outstretched, her head tilted back and gazing away to the east. Now even the Lady of Vines kept herself at a distance, standing well up on the beach and away from her mistress's conjuration.
"It isn't the land she is drawing power from," Morbus said.
He pointed at the Radiant Queen.
"Observe," he told Grim.
Alariel was standing at the edge of the sea, the waves rippling just ahead of her feet. While he looked on, Grim noted a change. It took him a moment to understand it was the fading of her radiance. The brilliant aura was collapsing, compressing closer and closer around her.
"Her light is dying," Grim said.
"She's using her own energies to power whatever enchantment she's trying to invoke," Morbus said.
Grim recalled the mournful aspect the Lady of Vines had assumed during his last audience with the Everqueen. He remembered the Branch Wraith's words about discretion and concealing things from friends. It was this she had been trying to prepare him for, the sacrifice of the Radiant Queen.
"We can't permit this,"
Grim told Morbus, as he hurried down towards the shore.
"Our duty is to protect the Everqueen, not stand idle while she destroys herself. Whatever her reasons, it must be stopped."
They raced towards Alariel, yet even as they did so, Grim could see that they were too late. The mighty conjuration the Radiant Queen had evoked was too much for her dwindling energies. Her light was vanishing, drawing tighter and tighter around her. He didn't know what would happen when the radiance pressed against Alariel's body, when glow and form became one. He was determined not to put that question to the test. Ahead of them, Grim saw the Lady of Vines prowling towards him, putting herself between him and Alariel. The Branch Wraith paced like a hungry lion, her bark transformed into a black scaly wood. Thorns projected from the coils of vines now, poison dripping from each needle. Her hands had elongated, her fingers hardening into great claws. The glow within her eyes was fierce and threatening, the glower of a wolf protecting its pups.
This doesn't concern you, Stormcast,
the branch wraith declared.
Step away, Grim ordered the Lady of Vines.
He waved his halberd at the collapsing radiance.
Whatever her purpose, I can't allow her to sacrifice herself.
For just a moment, Grim thought he saw a flicker pass through the branch wraith's burning gaze, a lessening of that threatening glower.
You cannot stop what must be,
she warned. The Lady of Vines stretched her hand towards him. A spray of splinters and thorns shot out at Grim, blinding him momentarily. He took a staggering step back, but the branch wraith made no move to press her attack. Instead, she turned towards the dwindling light of her queen.
It's too late, Morbus told Grim. The damage is done.
The glow of the Radiant Queen was collapsing now, rapidly vanishing. Alariel's power was expended, but it was more than that. To his horror, Grim could see no body behind the light. She was vanishing with her power. Before his eyes, he saw the glow shrivel and wither, becoming ever smaller and smaller. The skies overhead darkened, great storm-laden clouds boiling outward from the horizon. The warm, almost fetid air grew cold. Life itself seemed to be draining out of the land. Snow fell from the grey skies, carpeting the fields and glades in a deathly mantle.
Why? Grim asked himself. What was worth such a sacrifice?
As if in answer to his question, Grim saw far away to the east a shudder of motion. One of the distant mountains started to tremble, great avalanches of rock and snow crashing down from its peak. While he looked on in wonder, the terrain lurched upwards with a mighty heave. He could feel a tremor pass through the ground under his feet. It wasn't his imagination. The mountain was moving. Tall as a man, yet cast in the revolting shape of a rat, the monster bled sickly black blood across Torglug's axe. In its death spasms, the verminous creature snapped at the warlord with its yellowed fangs and raked at him with its clawed fingers. Torglug pressed the ratkin against the earthen wall, putting his immense strength and bloated bulk behind his blade. There was a delicious sound of crunching bone as the axe chewed its way deeper into the skaven. Polluted blood jetted from severed arteries and torn veins. The creature's anguished flailing became even more frenzied, its thrashing causing the axe to soar even deeper into its flesh. When the light of suffering drained out of the ratman's eyes, Torglug ripped his axe free. The body of his foe clung to the wall, plastered there by its own gore. He spun around, hewing through the shoulder of a second skaven, seeking to strike at his back. The vermin squealed as the blighted axe ripped through it and sent its carcass spinning through the air. A pack of scrawny, spear-armed ratkin abandoned their charge towards the bloated warlord as the mangled body crashed among their ranks. Squeaks of fright and a musty reek rose from the skaven as they turned tail and scurried back down the passage. Torglug looked around for something to kill, but there was only the pile of dead ratkin strewn about his feet. The tunnel was monumental in its dimensions, stretching hundreds of yards across, and of such height that even Guthrax didn't need to crouch as it waddled down the corridor. The walls were like black stretches of solidified shadow, pitted and scratched with the marks of shovels, picks, and drills. Crude supports of onyx and malachite propped up the blackness of the roof in sporadic fashion. Beams of grey crystal leaned against walls where they'd started to sag inwards, or lay toppled to the ground where the entropic miasma had come spilling in anyway. Skaven infested the tunnel, scurrying from tiny side passages, popping up from rents in the floor or dropping down from tears in the ceiling. Cloaked in filthy robes, froth bubbling from their mouths and frenzied madness gleaming in their eyes, the ratkins swarmed to confront Torglug's legion. Squealing mobs of plague monks, wielding staves of diseased wood and daggers of polluted metal, charged into herds of goat-headed beastmen. The ringing of profane bells and the snarls of obscene chants goading them onto the horns of their enemies. Packs of decayed monsters, with their fur sloughing away from their putrid bodies, rushed into the armored ranks of Chaos Warriors, exploding in bursts of burning pus when their foes struck them down. Grisly ratmen, their twisted bodies hidden in crusty robes, waved smoking censers at tribes of marauders, the vile fumes causing armor to rust and rot off the stricken men. Chittering their shrill war cries, the hordes of the clan's pestilens fought to drive the plague hosts back up to the surface. The Legion of Torglug, however, wouldn't be denied so easily. His tribesmen trampled the bodies of their own dead to reach the vermin waving the censers, dragging the plague monks down one after another and hacking them apart with cruel axes and serrated swords. Enraged Gauls carved a path through the mobs of ratmen, rending them to pieces in their fury. Vengefully, the Chaos Warriors pursued their tormentors, ignoring the scores of tribesmen they left writhing on the floor in their determination to cut down the slinking ratkin. Cyclopean plague-bearers and swarms of nurglings scrambled towards the sorcerous gongs the Skaven were striking, their demonic essence immune to the diseased magic of the ratmen. Across the tunnel, Torglug saw a plague monk cowering in front of Guthrax, apparently overcome by the monstrous demon's aura. Its squeaks turned into wails of terror as the obese monstrosity fixed its malignant gaze upon the ratman, hideous lights blazing from its roomy orbs. The Skaven shrieked as its body was engulfed in Guthrax's magic, fur sloughing away and flesh breaking out in black sores and red boils. The sorcerous plague leapt from the shrieking chanter to infect the monks around it, spreading its virulence to dozens of the vermin before its malign impetus was expended. Nearby, a hunched plague priest was locked in an arcane duel with Slaugoth Maggotfang. The Skaven magician sent tendrils of withering energy leaping from its paws. Ratmen and marauders fighting in the space between the plague priest and Slaugoth were struck down by the corrosive magic, the spell making no distinction between friend and foe. Yet when it came rushing towards the sorcerer, the spell fizzled into a cloud of greenish vapour. While the plague priest was snarling in frustration, Slaugoth retaliated, laughing as he sent a bolt of putrid fire exploding from the head of his staff and streaking towards the Skaven. Some spell or charm preserved the ratman from the worst of the sorcerer's fury, while the vermin around it were reduced to puddles of slime. The only effect upon the plague priest was a green tinge to its mangy fur and a layer of muck upon its robes. Torglug left Slaugoth to settle the contest on his own. The warlord had spotted a more immediate problem much closer to hand. A large swarm of Skaven warriors sweeping around to smash against the right flank of the plague host. Unlike the other ratmen, their robes had been fashioned from flayed hide, foul symbols inked into the leather, and in their hands were filthy swords that blazed with fell and corrupt energies. They moved with a confidence and discipline absent from the rest of the horde. At their fore was a white-furred chief, bedecked in a rat-hide cloak and robes. Guthrax had told him that this was the leader of the vermin infesting the tunnel, a high priest of Pestilens named Poxmonger Cricknit. The threat to the flank of his army was enough motivation to send Torglug running towards the fight, but he also had an idea to bring the fray to a quick end. Each warrior he lost fighting his way past the Skaven was one less fighter he could bring against the Everqueen's protectors. Skaven were slinking, cowardly creatures, bold only when they were confident of victory. There were two ways to break that confidence: butcher most of their horde, or kill their leader. Torglug reached the three-spine tribe, securing his right flank, just as the skin-robed plague monks thrust their way through an intervening pack of smaller Skaven warriors and struck the front ranks of the barbarian fighters. The fell energies of their filthy blades smouldered against the steel mail of the humans, shearing through what armor they wore. Cruel hooks on the heads of the blades caught in flesh, dragging warriors from the midst of their comrades to be hacked apart by opportunistic Skaven. The three spine were faltering when Torglug joined them, but the presence of their warlord fired their determination and made them redouble their assault against the Ratkin. Torglug pushed his way through the press of warriors, shouting for his enemy.
Cricknit! Be facing me, Prince of Vermin! Be facing me, Digger of Holes!
Thrusting his way to the front of the battle, Torglug brought his axe chopping down into the head of a plague monk, splitting both the ratman's manskin cowl and the skull beneath.
Cricknit! Torglug of the 12 Plagues is for challenging you!
The warlord bellowed, as his blade hacked through the arm of another plague monk. Off to his right he could see the Skaven leader, its white fur standing out in stark contrast to the mangy pelts of the vermin surrounding it. Cricknit looked in Torglug's direction, its ears curling close against the sides of its head, and its eyes going wide with fright.
Be facing me! Be facing the favoured son of Nurgle!
Torglug butchered his way through the intervening Skaven, leaving the three-spined tribesmen to finish those foes he merely maimed and injured in his vicious advance. The poxmonger fled, slinking back through the ranks of its warriors, pushing hapless ratmen into Torglug's path, squeaking angrily at those of its minions that tried to protest their leader's retreat. It appeared that Cricknit wanted nothing to do with Torglug or the diseased axe that could wreak such carnage among its warriors. With unabashed cowardice, the ratman left its fellows to face the warlord's onslaught. Soon, despite the murderous fury of Torglug's assault, Cricknit had withdrawn from the pack of skin-clad monks and was scurrying down one of the side passages. Frustrated, Torglug flung the head of a decapitated Skaven after the fleeing ratkin. Squeals of fright now rang out all across the tunnel. The air became rank with the stink of musk, smothering even the necrotic reek of Torglug's followers. Clutches of ratkin followed the example set by their high priest, abandoning the fight to slip down holes and scramble into side passages. Swifter even than the sorcerous plague Guthrax had conjured against the Skaven, terror spread among the ratmen. The retreat of a few became a general rout, swarms of vermin fighting and clawing at one another as they sought to flee. Torglug cut down the plague monks near to him, carving a gory trail through them. The broken Skaven retreated before him, but their flight was blocked by other packs of routed ratkin. The fight had left the vermin, but Torglug's legion was of no mind to offer them mercy. They pursued their enemy, massacring them as they tried to climb over one another in their eagerness to escape. Torglug the Despised drank in the cries of panic and pain. However many of the ratkin managed to escape, they wouldn't rally for another attack. They'd make no move to interfere with the plague host's march through the tunnels. Dismissing the Skaven from his thoughts, Torglug anticipated finding his quarry and how he would steal her from her protectors. Impossibly vast, a living mountain lumbered out from behind the horizon. Every step of its craggy legs made the earth shiver and sent a tremble rolling across the landscape. Its stony shoulders seemed to scrape the clouds, and veils of mist and fog spilled down the cliffs of its chest. Mighty boulders ground against one another as the giant's rocky arms swung at its sides. Slabs of granite and limestone clashed together, groaning with the deafening bellow of an avalanche. As the Titan slogged across field and stream, an atmosphere of bitter cold and driving snow swept ahead of it. Frost seized the vegetation, ice grasped at the waters, and gales of pallid snow blanketed the land. The animate mountain trudged along the edge of the sea to the south, each step cracking the earth. Snow came swirling across the fields of death blooms now, smothering the diseased growths under a white blanket of oblivion. The giant, oblivious or indifferent to the destruction it provoked, lumbered on, making towards the great expanse of water ahead of it. It seemed impossible to Grimm that such a gargantuan being could exist, and much less that it could be summoned by even the mightiest of magic. It was the thought of magic that broke the awed fascination that held him. Alariel. The Ever Queen had sacrificed herself to call this Titan, expending the last of her essence to work her spell. Grimm might have stopped her, if not for the interference of her handmaiden. He tore his eyes from the awesome sight of the walking mountain to glare at the Lady of Vines. The branch wraith still had her back to him, turned instead to the spot where Alariel had stood. A keening harmony sounded from the handmaiden, a melody of both loss and promise.
"In any language that sounds like a song of mourning,"
Lord Relictor Morbus told Grimm.
"She kept us from stopping Alariel,"
Grimm snarled, clenching his halberd tight.
"We failed in our mission, and I'm going to find out why."
Grimm marched towards the Lady of Vines, Morbus following behind. He could hear Retributor Prime Marcius and his paladins coming up behind them. It wouldn't be long before the warriors and their lightning hammers were available to support him. He risked a glance at the vast gathering of Silverneth that had accompanied their queen on her final journey. If the tree creatures supported the Lady of Vines, Grimm knew his small group of stormcasts would be overwhelmed before the rest of the Hallowed Knights could reach them. The Silverneth, however, were silent, as still as the trees they resembled. There was an expectant quality about that silence, like the quiet before a storm. As he walked towards the Lady of Vines, Grimm noted that her aspect had changed once again. Her bark had lightened, taking on a rich amber colour and becoming smooth as a river rock. The vines twined about her lithe shape had lost their thorns, the leaves becoming rich and full, with little clusters of berries hanging from them. Her hands had lost their claws, shifting into delicate fingers that were curled around. Grimm looked in confusion at the object the branch wraith held. At first he thought it was some kind of jewel, so brilliantly did it sparkle. Then he appreciated that the shine wasn't the play of light upon the object, but rather a glow that emanated from within it. A few steps more, and he realized that the radiance was familiar to him, exuding that same atmosphere of comfort and invitation he'd felt in the Radiant Queen's presence. Peering closer, he could see something beneath the light, an ovoid shape about the size of his fist. It was a seed. The observation spurred 1,000 questions in Grimm's mind. Was this what Alariel had intended? To expend her energies until all that was left of her was this seed? Did she think this was the only way she'd be able to escape Torglug's legions? What was the power of this remnant, this relic? Was it simply a talisman, a legacy left to the Silverneth? Or was it something more than that? A promise for the future? The Lady of Vines closed her hands protectively around the glowing seed. Still singing her keening song, she turned from Grimm and walked towards the massed Silverneth. When she was only a few feet from the edge of the exiles, she held her arms out to them, showing them the relic she held. A sound rolled through the living forest, a great thrum, unlike anything Grimm had ever heard before. There was a sense of both adoration and praise in that sound. The Silverneth were swearing a vow, but the nature of that promise was something Grimm was unable to fathom.
"Leave her be," Grimm told Morbus,
as the Lord Relictor moved towards the branch wraith. He looked across the masses of Silverneth, struck by the reverent sense of loss and promise that rose from them. For the Hallowed Knights, the Everqueen had represented honour and duty, but for the Silverneth she had been everything.
"Leave them to their sorrow, while they have the chance to indulge it."
The Stormcasts withdrew, falling back from the shingle and letting their allies pay respect to their queen. Grimm turned his attention back to the lumbering mountain. Many of the Stormcasts were gazing in awe at the Colossus. The behemoth was nearer now, though the pace of its quaking steps had slackened. It was still circling around the edge of the sea, though Grimm noticed its path wasn't one that would bring it towards the Silverneth, but rather out into a bay a league or so away.
"It is a Jotunberg," Morbus said, giving name to the giant. "They are supposed to be few in number, stewards of Gyron's seasons, heralds of the dying time,
He pointed at the immense Titan. At each step, boulders and slabs of rock tumbled away from its body, smashing to the ground in an avalanche of destruction. Grim watched as the Jotunberg stumbled onwards through the haze of snow and fog spilling from its body. Had the giant truly come in response to Alariel's magic? If so, to what purpose had she called this behemoth? And why did it now turn from the Sylvaneth? He shook his head. Puzzles without answer, and of little consequence now that the Radiant Queen was unable to answer them.
Forget the giant, Grim said. Our purpose here has changed. Queen Alariel...
Before the Lord Castellan could finish speaking, a blast of icy air rushed past him, turning his breath to frost. He looked as the Jotunberg stepped out into the sea. A quaking groan boomed across the land as the behemoth stumbled. Then the living mountain pitched forwards, slamming down into the sea in a cataclysmic crash that set the earth itself shivering. The water, displaced by its impact, flashed outwards in mighty waves, then hardened into crests of ice. The chill raced outwards from the fallen giant, coursing through the sea and freezing its surface. In the matter of only a few heartbeats, a distance of several hundred yards around the giant had been turned to ice, expanding outwards quicker than Grim's eye could follow. The skies unleashed their fury in earnest now, great swirling gales of icy snow whipping across the land. Heralds of the dying time, Morbus had called the Jotunberg. The giants were the bearers of winter. As the ice spread towards their piece of shoreline, Grim saw the Sylvaneth start forwards. The tree creatures stepped out onto the ice, making their way across the frozen sea. It was a strange sight, a walking forest marching over the frozen waves. Grim was solemn as he watched that exodus, wondering where the Sylvaneth would go, what it was that awaited them on the other side. Would they find the refuge towards which the Everqueen had been leading them? Was there indeed anywhere in the realm of Gyron that could be called safe from Nurgle's corruption? Grim looked down when he heard Talon start growling. The Griffhound's fur was on end, his feathers ruffled. He knew the creature well enough to recognize it sensed the nearness of enemies.
Tigress! Grim shouted. Get your prosecutors into the air and scout for the enemy, numbers and disposition. I want to know how long we can buy for our allies to cross the ice. Angston, gather the Liberator conclaves and form a shield wall along the beach. Judicators on the flanks to provide supporting fire.
Even as Angston started deploying the stormcasts, the clatter of armour and the snarls of beasts reached the hallowed knights. Plague warriors were indeed close, nearer than Grim had feared them to be.
Commander, what about us? Do we follow them?
Marcius asked, pointing at the Sylvaneth. With the Sylvaneth marching out onto the ice, the hallowed knights Grim had deployed to guard the flanks and act as pickets were falling back towards the stony shingle lining the shore. He started to answer Marcius, to tell him there was no reason to follow the Sylvaneth. But then he noticed that the Lady of Vines was standing at the edge of the ice, hesitating to join the march, still singing her eerie song. Slowly, almost reluctantly, her eyes fastened upon Grimm's. The branch wraith held her hands towards him, her fingers parting to show him the seed. Deftly, she reached to a hollow in her breast, carefully setting the seed into the recess. Then she turned, quickly disappearing into the moving forest of Sylvaneth, her keening song drifting away with her, as she walked out towards the ice. No words had been spoken, for the Lady of Vines couldn't allow her song to falter, but Grim understood the meaning the branch wraith had tried to convey. She knew the duty that the hallowed knights were sworn to. They had been sent to protect the Radiant Queen. Grim had thought they'd failed in that purpose, but now he understood he was wrong. The seed was more than a relic or a legacy. It was Alariel herself, the Everqueen's essence collapsed into a soul pod, waiting to be reborn.
Join the Sylvaneth, Grim told Marcius. We must protect the Lady of Vines and guard the seed she carries.
You think Alariel lives on in the seed?
Morbus asked.
I do not think it. I know it, Grim said. The Lady of Vines has told me it is so.
He saw the uncertainty in the Lord Relictor's eyes.
We still have a chance to fulfill our duty here and deny the enemy his victory.
It is true no man can ever fully understand the ways of magic, Morbus said. But to believe the Radiant Queen lives on as a seed...
The sound of wings brought the eyes of the stormcast skywards. Tegras and his prosecutors came swooping down, diving towards Grimm and his companions. At the last instant, the winged warriors pulled back, arresting the momentum of their dive. Ordinarily, the daunting exhibition would be accomplished with an air of bravado and showmanship. Now, however, it was laced with an air of urgency.
Lord Castellant, Tegras addressed Grimm with a bow. We've sighted a vast throng of enemy warriors advancing in this direction.
A confederation of scavenging warbands,
Marcius suggested. Tegras shook his head.
They are too many to be mere scavengers, he reported. We flew low enough to see the banners they bore. I recognized the emblems of Torglug the Despised.
His tone grew still darker.
There is an enormous demon with them. Some gigantic obscenity spat out by Nurgle himself.
Morbus clenched his fist.
Then the Radiant Queen's magic was for naught, he snarled. She sped us away from Athelweard only for the enemy to catch up to us just the same.
A grim laugh sounded from behind his skull-like mask.
At least we can make Torglug regret finding us.
We still have our duty, Grim told Morbus. We protect the Queen's seed. That is more important than killing the enemy.
He looked back to Tegras.
How far away would you say Torglug is?
If not for the snowstorm, they'd already have seen us, Tegras said.
Grim nodded. He turned and faced towards the ice, studying the shoreline and the march of the Sylvaneth. The chilling effect of the Jotunberg's fall had been capricious in its action. There were gaps in the ice, great expanses of frigid water sloshing around the frozen crests. 100 yards out from the shore, the ice narrowed into a bridge between 2 stretches of icy water.
Tegras, take your prosecutors and watch Torglug's legion. Any change, fly back here and report it to me.
Grim saluted the prosecutor prime as he climbed back into the air with his warriors. Turning, he addressed Marcius.
Take your retributors and form up around that bridge, he said, pointing at the span he'd noticed. When Diocletian comes up, I'll send his paladins to join you.
What is it that you have in mind? Morbus asked.
Once we're out on the ice, if we break that bridge, there'll be no connection to the shore, Grim said. Torglug's warriors will be trapped on this side of the sea.
A sound plan, Morbus said. But I think it will need more than lightning hammers and thunder axes to split the ice.
He waved at the snow falling around them.
The enemy has his own magic to call upon. I don't think we can rely on this flurry to hide us from Torglug for long. There may not be time to crack the ice by force of arms.
Grim felt cold inside. Morbus was right, of course. He couldn't depend upon the enemy giving him the time to execute his plan. But what was the alternative? What would Gardas have done if he were here? How would he have made use of the assets at his command?
Morbus, breaking the ice is your job, Grim told the Lord Relictor.
Morbus patted his hammer's head like it was a griffhound.
I've shattered the bones of Trogoths and broken the backs of demons with this, he said. It would be shameful if I told you I could be beaten by a little ice.
The last of the Sylvaneth were crossing the bridge when the vanguard of Torglug's horde emerged from the snowstorm. Even from his position out on the ice, Grim could see the look of surprise on the first marauder's face as he suddenly found his quarry in front of him. Before the barbarian could shout to his fellows, one of the judicators loosed an arrow into him, knocking the man back into the oblivion of the storm. Talon growled at the fallen enemy, his hackles raised. Grim quieted the griffhound with a curt command. It was only a momentary respite. More of Torglug's warriors appeared, loping out of the storm like ravening wolves. Now there were too many for the judicators to put down before their cries of discovery reached the ears of the horde. Through a rain of Sigmarite arrows and bolts, the enemy pressed forwards,
rushing out onto the shingle in a howling mob of men and monsters. The line of liberators bringing up the rear were just crossing the bridge. Grim scowled as his mind turned over the distance between them and the foe. It was going to be close. Closer than was comfortable. The same thought must have come to Morbus. The Lord Relictor started back towards the bridge. Grim laid a restraining hand on his shoulder.
Wait,
Grim told Morbus. The Lord Relictor looked at him, but didn't offer an objection. Morbus had a penchant for seeking the dark side of everything, of always finding the worst possibilities. Grim prayed to Sigmar that this time the Dur warrior was wrong. Packs of beast hounds loped out from the storm, rushing past the enemies already on the shingle. The mutated beasts howled and snarled as they pursued the scent of the hallowed knights, moving with such speed that only a few of them fell to Judicator's arrows as they came. Their claws raking the ice, the hideous brutes charged after the liberators, baying in triumph as they came rushing onto the bridge. Grim felt a chill rush through his heart. If the liberators turned to face the beast hounds, then the enemies on the shingle would gain the time they needed to reach the bridge. The Judicators couldn't loose their arrows directly into the dogs, because their own comrades were in the way. Grim had to depend on the inability of the brutish creatures to realize that fact.
By volley! Loose!
The command was given by Angston, the knight Vexilor. The Judicators with him raised their skybolt bows and sent a rain of arrows arcing into the air. The missiles came hurtling downwards, a dozen yards behind the withdrawing liberators. Many of the beast hounds were caught in the descending volley, their thick hides pierced over and again by the Sigmarite shafts. Yelps of pain rang out as the injured creatures writhed on the ice. Others toppled into the icy slush to either side. Panicked by the whines of the other beasts, even those hounds that had charged ahead of the volley turned around and fled back towards the shore. Now, Grim motioned Morbus forwards. The Lord Relictor marched past the Liberator rearguard and raised his relic hammer high. Invoking the divine power of Sigmar, he called out to the God King. Even as the first marauders and gores ventured out onto the ice, mighty blasts of lightning came hurtling downwards. Where the bolt struck, the ice was vaporized, steaming craters gouged out of the bridge by each strike, exposing great pits of icy water and slush. The main span of the bridge was fractured and fragmented, but the aftermath left behind dozens of smaller, slighter spans. For once, Morbus's pessimism had missed a possibility. The relic hammer's power had failed to crack the bridge completely, and there was no guarantee another lightning strike would accomplish what the first had not. When the enemy recovered from the shock inflicted on them by Morbus's magic, they'd come swarming across the spans that remained. If only a few of them held, it would be a disaster. The creaking groan of marching Sylvaneth drew Grim's attention away from the bridge. He watched as a file of towering tree lords came striding back across the ice, their branches heavy with snow from the storm. The huge Sylvaneth walked past him, converging upon the near side of the bridge where Morbus stood. As the first of the Chaos Warriors came charging out onto the battered bridge, the tree lords slammed their massive feet against the seaward edge. Roots snaked out from their feet, burrowing into the ice. A tremor rushed through the frozen waves, and the sharp crack of splitting ice rang out. The enemies, rushing onto the span, shouted in horror. Not a man or beast lingered. Almost as one, they turned and fled back towards the shingle. The cracks caused by the tree lords widened, catching the slowest of the enemy warriors and pitching them into the icy slush of the sea. Still, the Sylvaneth roots burrowed, causing the spans to split and collapse into the water. Only when the gap between the frozen sea and the shore was too wide for even the most agile beast hound to leap, did the tree lords relent. Glaring at the men and monsters on the shore, the huge Sylvaneth strode back the way they had come, vanishing into the swirling flurries of snow. Grim looked over the vast expanse of water that now lay between him and the shore. It would take Torglug's forces hours to throw a bridge across that span. By then, the Hallowed Knights and the Sylvaneth would be far across the ice.
With the snowstorm to hide their trail and conceal their position, they just might be able to slip away entirely.
"Withdraw!"
Grim called out to his warriors, turning a deaf ear to the jeers and curses of the foes clustered along the shoreline. The hallowed knights turned at his command, falling back across the ice. As with the tree lords, it wasn't long before the storm hid them from the eyes of their foe. Torglug the Despised looked down at the corpse of the Beast Lord. Brakthor had been one of his chieftains ever since it had slaughtered its own leader in single combat. Vicious and cunning, it had been a capable enough lieutenant. Still, at the moment, Torglug didn't need a lieutenant. He needed an example.
"I am not being cheated of my prize,"
Torglug bellowed, pointing his axe at the rest of his champions.
"I am not being denied my destiny."
He kicked the horned head at his feet, causing blood to slosh out of the gaping wound in Rakthor's neck.
"All of Gyron could be falling to Grandfather, but he's being nothing to him without Everqueen."
The warlord's minions were silent. They knew Torglug's rages and knew that the best way to survive them was to escape his notice. Only a brave man, or a foolish one, would tempt the anger of Nurgle's chosen. Walking out across the shingle and diving down into the icy slush would be preferable to falling foul of their master. Guthrax alone seemed to find humour in the situation, chuckling darkly at the warlord's distress and the fright of his chieftains. The great unclean one's mockery vexed Torglug. Guthrax was a formidable ally, but an obnoxious one. Whirling around, the warlord pointed his axe at his most powerful sorcerer. Slaugoth Maggotfang muttered a nervous laugh when he felt the warlord's eyes on him. The chieftains around him edged away. If Slaugoth was due a tortuous doom from the warlord, then let the sorcerer suffer alone.
"You are boasting always of your magic. You are telling always how mighty your sorcery is being. Now I am to be putting your magic to test. You are knowing what I am offering those who fail me,"
Torglug warned. He settled back into the seat of the throne that had been raised for him on the shingle, a chair crafted from the corpses of warriors who'd failed to cross the ice before it cracked.
"I could get your army across," Slaugoth grinned, "but the cost will be high."
He raised his swollen hand to fend off the fury he saw blazing in Torglug's blemished eyes.
"It is not a reward I seek," he hurried to explain. "This particular sorcery is dangerous and demanding. It will need the lives of many of your followers."
"To be dying in my service is a glory all who are serving me should be happy to embrace,"
Torglug said, threat bubbling behind each word. Slaugoth came closer to the throne. He thrust one hand towards Torglug, while the other he held before his own mouth. When he spoke again, only the warlord could understand him. The rest of the chieftains heard only the buzz of flies.
"I will need the coin of Thag. It is in the possession of Vorak of Thel."
"Agreed,"
Torglug said. The sorcerer smiled, worms dripping from between his teeth.
"I will also need Vorak himself. I will need another 20 sorcerers from among your legion, drawn from the strongest of your shamans and warlocks."
Slaugoth let a note of mock severity slip into his tone.
"I must warn that it is unlikely they will survive the ritual." "Be careful, woodsman,"
Guthrax advised, the demon's vast gut quivering with amusement.
"Worm Teeth intends to eliminate all of his rivals. He'll make himself even more vital to your ambitions."
One glance at the face of Slaugoth was proof enough that the demon, for once at least, was speaking the truth. It was a gamble, but the Plague Lord felt the risk was worth the stake. Besides, if Slaugoth forgot his place, He still had Guthrax to put him down again. Torglug chuckled, the sound slobbering up from the depths of his bloated bulk.
Be getting me to my prize, and I am letting you kill any that are surviving.
The putrid Blight Kings were dispatched to subdue the needed materials for Slaugoth's ritual. Some of the more recalcitrant required Guthrax to convince them to cooperate, the demon's power easily swatting aside the wards and protections they tried to use to preserve themselves. It was as well that the rite needed intact minds rather than intact bodies. Torglug himself secured Vorak's participation, ignoring the warlock's assurances that he could perform the rite just as adeptly as Slaugoth could. When Vorak was dragged before his rival, he was missing the coin of Thak, as well as his left leg. The sorcerers chosen by Slaugoth were dumped along the shingle, facing out towards the ice. Three great circles of witches, warlocks, and shamans, the rock about their feet stained with cabalistic sigils and the profane runes of Nurgle. A few of the most powerful among them, such as Vorak, had some inclination of what was coming, but their wisdom only made them appreciate that there was no escape. Slaugoth stood at the centre of the three circles, the speck in the middle of the fly rune. With the coin of Thak hanging about his neck, he was certain he'd be able to protect himself from the hazards involved in such a hasty ritual. He raised his arms high and began an invocation to his diseased god. Nurgle's armies infested the whole of Gyron, and it was here that the god's attention was fixed. It wasn't strange, then, that the grandfather heard Slaugoth's appeal and answered his cry. The diseased might of Nurgle poured into the gathered sorcerers. Slaugoth felt his bloated belly churn and quiver with the boiling corruption of his god. Crying out in agony, he disgorged the filth growing inside him. A stream of foul water, stagnant muck from the swamps of Nurgle's own domain, vomited from his mouth, flowing out across the shingle towards the distant ice. From each of the other sorcerers, a stream of putrescence erupted and cascaded towards the ice. The diseased fluid merged with the other streams, gathering into a single rancid river. As the flow struck the frigid air, it began to harden, congealing into a mire of corruption. Gallon upon gallon spewed from the sorcerers, channeled from the grandfather's garden. Horned shamans and bloated witches perished as the malignant spell ripped them apart from the inside out. Yet even death didn't end the foul discharge spilling from them. More and more of the corruption streamed across the gap. From a mire, the flow hardened into an icy mush. The swampy substance grew thicker, concentrating into a ghoulish mass. By the time the streams of filth died out, a putrid glacier stretched across the gap. Slaugoth fell to his knees as the sickening spell petered out. He wiped residue from his face and ripped the corroded coin of Thak from his neck. The talisman had served its purpose. Glancing towards where Vorak had been dumped, he saw that his rival hadn't survived the spell, his belly ruptured by the enormity of Nurgle's power. It was odd to see that the minor witch next to Vorak had survived, but the ways of chaos were capricious. The sorcerer laughed as he heaved himself back onto his feet and watched the plague host charging across the bridge he'd conjured. Torglug was certain to catch the enemy now, to seize the prize Nurgle coveted so dearly. The warlord would be exalted by the grandfather for such a triumph, and when he was, Slaugoth would share in that glory.